eliminated all the programs just because the towns couldn't afford to pay for everything, and they made cuts, and unfortunately, the areas that they cut were all those elective classes, so.
I see.
Alright. Oh, thank you.
Have you seen the Patterson-Gimlin film?
Have I seen what?
The Patterson-Gimlin film.
What is that?
I don't know, I just know it by heart. It's like, you know, it's literally your target. I kind of think.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I didn't know it had a name.
I don't know why I know the name by heart.
No, that's pretty good. Like, when I hear, like, films like that, like the Zapruder film, I know that one, but...
I don't know that one.
You could have just said, like, the Bigfoot film, and I'm
well,
like,
yeah,
oh,
I'm
yeah.
trying to be like, you know, bro. If you know it by heart, you gotta say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear. I mean, yep, be proud. You know, that could be a Jeopardy question. You know,
dude,
you never
could,
know.
Bro. Yeah. Could. Like, one time I was in Jeopardy, and they said, what's the name of the island in Jurassic Park? And I love the movies, but I have no idea what it was.
Isla Nublar.
Yeah, now I remember it.
Shut up. Was that really what it was called?
Isla Nublar.
It's not there, really? I think.
Yes, it was, because I've seen all the Jurassic Park movies.
It's
wow. Well done.
Weirder.
Yes. Because it's you know, because the movie's set in Costa Rica, though.
Yeah?
It takes place in Costa Rica, though.
Right.
But it's not a real island, though. It's a fictional island.
Well, yeah, obviously. There's no island where they were making dinosaurs on.
It is, though. I would have failed that question, then.
The movie itself was filmed in Hawaii, though. It was filmed in Hawaii.
Yeah, it was filmed in Hawaii. I went to one of the
islands. Wait, what am I doing? Documents? No.
On my list of colleges, I want to go to Hawaii. I mean, I guess the best school in Hawaii is an acceptance rate of like 60, 70 something, and like graduation rate of like 60%.
So, everyone take tests?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Very good.
I finished it.
That's the most important part. Make sure you get it done. So I did bombard you with a couple of updates. I'm playing with Blackboard a little bit over the weekend. I had some time. So obviously I put the drop box for your paper. Remember, papers are due on November 22nd. So time is ticking. So what you'll do is you'll just take the file and you'll drag it in. And then the computer will scan it and look for plagiarism. And then I'll get notification that it's there, and then I will grade it. The other thing is that we have to have a temporary room change on one day. We have to do a class over in the admin building. My dean contacted me. She didn't exactly tell me why, but usually if the dean asks you to do a favor, you kind of say yes. Word of advice, when you go out and get jobs, if your boss asks you, can you do me a favor, you just say yes. You figure out how to make it work.
I saw your email, made me chuckle.
Yeah, I saw it too.
Because, like, as soon as I got it, I'm like, I better say something because someone, I know, I have faith in all you guys. You'll remind me. Because I'll probably forget, but. It's like November 21st or something like that. It's a ways away. I put a couple of reminders in my phone. All right, so as we've done once before, we got to do it again. You're going to put a line in your notes because we are going forward and going to cover the stuff for exam number 3. We got 4 exams to do total. We got 2 of them in the books. Let's get the stuff for exam 3. And we're going to continue our focus on the state governments. We did the legislative branch. We saw it in Massachusetts how a bill becomes a law. Now we're going to do the governors, the executive branch. All right, now, in the country of these United States, whenever you hear the title governor, it's referring to the chief executive. The head of the executive branch in each state or territory. They are the highest figure in terms of authority within, again, state or territory. Now, the governors do retain sovereign police power. Because again, what is the job of the executive branch? What does the executive branch do? Nobody knows.
It carries out the laws.
Exactly, it enforces the laws. It's to execute the law that's passed by the legislative branch. So, what does this mean? Well, this means that each governor is technically the head of all of the different executive departments that have been created through statutes. So he's the top cop, he's the top, or he or she is the top cop, the top environmental enforcement, tax collector, whatever. All of the duties of the executive branch, he is the top official of. But, let's be honest, he's not all powerful, or she's not all powerful. Because the state is subordinate to the federal government. So within the jurisdictional confines, the governor has authority, but the governor at times is answerable to the commander-in-chief of the country. Now they have many, many duties, and they have so many different duties, and they vary state to state, it's not even worth trying to remember any of them. So we'll just leave it at this. Technically, they are the top politician in their state. Although in the age of partisanship, they are also viewed as being the head of their political party. They also have ceremonial responsibilities that they're supposed to fulfill. So, for example, I don't watch local news because I don't like really any of the local news channels that I can get on my cable, but I happen to be flipping through some of the local news channels and I saw that the Celtics were raising the banner from their championship last year and Maura Healey was in the house. You know, she was there basically saying Celtic pride. You know, she wasn't there in a political capacity, but more of a ceremonial capacity. Because obviously, if you have a sports team that wins a national title, you know, the people of the state feel good about it.
It's a good one.
What?
It's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Now, how does one become a governor? Through elections. There is no stater. There's no, let me be precise, because the governors and the territories are appointed. But there is no state that has an appointment for governor. All governors are directly elected by the people. So no state has an electoral college system. So on election day, every 4 years, when you go in and you vote for governor, you're actually casting votes for that man or woman. Now, nearly three quarters of the states, 36 of them, have their elections on the even years when it's not a presidential year. So it's commonly referred to as the midterm. So this 2024 is a presidential election year. You're not going to, if you go vote, if you haven't voted yet, and you go vote on Tuesday, like I am. I'm already planning on camping out. I'm going to be the first one. Come hella high water. And my town clerk already told me, if I actually show up there early before she does, she's going to call the press in. Look at this nerd. He's camping out just so he could vote.
Do it.
I'm going to.
I want to see you on TV.
Heck yeah, I've already been on TV. I'm on TV like every couple of times a month. But
are you really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We record all our meetings.
Oh.
All right. But oh yeah. So 2024 is presidential election year. It's our next gubernatorial election year. As with most states, is next 2 year cycle. So 2026. Now there, of course, there are some states that are in the odd years. So New Jersey, Virginia. They're in the odd years. So the next gubernatorial race in New Jersey is 2025, as with Virginia. No.
Yeah, Virginia is 2025. The last gubernatorial election was in 2021.
Oh, yeah, okay. Now, in terms of, again, we're just talking in a generalized sense. In terms of overall power, governors do hold considerable power. But the extent depends. It varies. How much power? What specific powers? Again, we don't have time to go through the list of each power of every single governor in our country. So we'll just say there's lots of things they can do. But we'll highlight two of the most important. The most important power is they have the power to veto statutes. Actually, they're not statutes, they're bills that are passed by the legislative branch. Now, the types of vetoes differ. In Massachusetts, our governor has a qualified negative veto. But if the governor is going to veto a bill, they have to veto the entire bill. There are 43 states, the majority, that actually give the governors what's called a line item veto. In those states, the governors, it's a qualified negative, but they can go in and they can veto a part of a bill. They don't have to do the whole bill. Massachusetts, they have to do the whole bill. It's all or nothing. Most legislatures can override, the majority of them, a veto with a two-thirds vote. Massachusetts. But there are some states that require a three-fifths vote. Last distinction. Oh, wait, no, strike that. There's actually four states that they only need a simple majority. Alabama, Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee. Interesting. Oh, and it's not even an absolute majority. It's only a majority of those present. Wow! So you could theoretically override in those states a governor's veto with 26% of the elected representatives. Because you have to have a quorum, which would be a majority. And then it's a majority of a quorum. Wow, that's crazy. I didn't really think about that before.
I didn't even know that about those states.
Yeah, that's insane. Arkansas is another state that requires a majority, but it's an absolute majority. So it's a majority of all of the members. It's not a majority of the quorum. Interesting. Little stuff I know. Oh, interestingly enough, the last state to give the governor the power to veto was North Carolina. You know when they did it?
When?
1996.
Wow.
So it was recent. And that was done by a referendum, a ballot question. Good stuff, good stuff. Arguably, the second most important power of a governor is the power of appointment in the event of a vacancy for the U.S. Senate. Now, governors have the authority to appoint the executive officers in the different executive offices, but some states allow the governor to fill a vacancy. 47 of the 50 states allow the governor to appoint somebody if there is a vacancy until a special election occurs. So they can put somebody in as a temporary placeholder. And then the state holds the special election, and then if that happens to be the person who wins, then they stay in office, but usually it's two other candidates, or three other candidates running for it. So what does this mean? Well, this means that they could put in whoever they wanted. So if it's a Republican governor, but it was a Democrat senator who died or resigned, the Republican governor could put in a Republican.
Could they just like put in their mom or something?
They could put in anybody they want.
That's weird.
Yeah, the only qualifications you'd have to fulfill is the constitutional requirements to be a U.S. senator. You have to be over the age of 30, and you have to reside in the country for the last 7 years. All right, what else do I got in my little notes? Oh, there are three states that don't allow any type of appointment. That's Oregon, Alaska, and Wisconsin. Now, interestingly enough, Massachusetts, not too long ago, didn't allow the governor to fill a vacancy. They required the seat to remain open until the special election. And it has changed twice in the last 20 years. Originally, it was fillable. But when John Kerry decided he was going to run for president, we had Mitt Romney, a Republican, as governor. So the state passed the law and overrode the governor's veto that stripped Romney of the power to put a temporary appointment in. Then, fast forward, when Deval Patrick was in office, they changed the law again to allow the governor to fill a vacancy. That was after the death of Ted Kennedy. So Deval Patrick was able to put in a Democrat, but when the special election occurred, Scott Brown won, Republican. And then he filled out the remainder of the term, and then Elizabeth Warren ended up beating him and taking the seat. All right. Now, most of the states, not all, most, require the governor to give an official report to the population. It's not the State of the Union, that's the presidential report. This is the state of the state. But there is no requirement that they have to present it in person. There are some states that allow the governors simply to draft a report and submit it to the legislature. Massachusetts, we do have a ceremony in which, in and around January, February-ish, the governor is invited into the House of Representatives chamber because the Senate chamber is too small, and the governor is given an opportunity to do the political state of the state address. For the last bunch of years, going back to at least when Romney was governor, usually Channel 2, PBS, they broadcast it live. Oh, one thing that I do not have on here, but I do have in my notes, I don't know why it came up, is that there are some governors that have governor's mansions, that they actually have residences set up, that where the governor lives while they're governor. We do not. Mm-hmm. We do not. It goes all the way back to the protests, during the beginning of what would become the War of Independence, when the Sons of Liberty burned down the governor's mansion.
And then they didn't really want to build another one,
though. Nope, and they never wanted to build it again.
They didn't really want to pay the price to build another one, though.
No, it was not the price. It was the symbolic nature of it. If you want to serve, you have to do so at your own expense. We're not going to give you a palace to live in. All right. So, what do these governors do? Well, they do lots of things. And as the book says in the executive chapter, they describe it as the governor wearing many hats. They are the top policymaker, they're the chief legislature, they're the chief administrator, the ceremonial leader, they're involved in intergovernmental coordination, they're the economic developer, they're the economic promoter, and they're the political party leader. I'll pull those all up. But to say that they do a lot is true. But hands down, probably the most important aspect of being a governor is that they are in charge of developing and making public policy. What is policy?
What is policy?
What?
It's not the rules, because the rules would be a law. Because a rule is something you have to follow.
Policy is more like a guideline.
It's more like a guideline. So let's come up with an idea. This is something we think is a good idea. And this is how we think we're going to achieve it. It doesn't mean that you have to follow it. It's just a suggestion. So essentially, the goal is to establish this template to achieve an outcome. Because that's the goal of a policy. There's something you want to do. Something you want to have happen. Now, policy has intent. This is something you want to do. And there are steps towards implementation. But it's different than a law. Remember, policy is different than a law. Because a law, you can be compelled to follow. And what happens if you don't follow a law? What could happen to you? Yeah, there are consequences. You could be punished. Potentially ending up in jail. Absolutely. So, as chief policymaker, the governor has to have good, solid relationships with not only the heads of the executive departments, but they also have to have good relations with the head of the legislature. Because some policies are enacted through laws. Or laws are passed to support the policy. Oh, and what happens if the governor pushes an unpopular policy?
He might not get voted back in.
There could be consequences. So that's the third group that the governor has to get on board. You don't have to get all of the people, but you have to get many of the people to support it as well. So if the governor is unlikable, I don't care what the policy is, the people aren't going to support it because they don't like the governor. And that has happened in the country often.
Yeah, like the last election that happened was in Nevada, though, too, in 2022.
What happened in Nevada in 2022?
So Steve Sisolak was the incumbent governor, though, but he lost his re-election to Joe Lombardo, who is the now incumbent governor.
And why did he lose the election?
Because he wasn't popular or anything. They didn't like his policies.
That's definitely huge. You gotta be like a bull, too. That's the other thing. If you're not like a bull, you can't win people over. All right, the next area, and of course these do come from the book as well. The book mentions the next job or hat that the governor wears is kind of being like a cheerleader if there's a need for a law. Essentially, to get the goals of a policy, sometimes, like I said, you have to have laws in place to achieve. And of course, in order to get a law passed, you have to go through the legislative process. And again, every state's how a bill becomes a law is different. We've already done Massachusetts. Now here's the thing. A governor cannot tell the legislature to pass a bill or to draft a bill. And in most states, governors cannot directly introduce a bill. So they can't tell them to do it, and they can't do it themselves. Interestingly enough, in Massachusetts, a governor can put in a petition, but it has to be sponsored by a member in each chamber. Our governor could propose a bill. But it has to get the support of at least one legislature in each chamber. Now, what could stop a governor from succeeding? Partisanship.
partisanship. You cannot be rah-rah political party to the extreme in most of the states. Because in most of the states, the other political party has enough numbers to stop a bill. In Massachusetts, that's only partially true. A Republican governor is going to run up against the Democrat supermajority. But in Massachusetts, a Democratic governor is pretty much going to be able to get what they want most of the times. But interestingly enough, if you go back in time to our last Democratic governor, Deval Patrick, he frequently clashed with the legislature. So, Deval got blocked less than Charlie Baker did, but Deval did get blocked. Mara Healey, on the other hand, she has no executive experience, so she's not a strong governor. So she really hasn't pushed anything too much, and she tends to go with whatever the Senate president and the majority, the Speaker of the House wants. So we don't really have partisanship issues for our governor, but most states do. Personality. This is a truism in politics. If you're an asshat, people aren't going to like you. And if people don't like you, you're not going to be able to get anything done. So, your book, I don't know what edition you have if you bought the book, but the example that your book uses is a Democrat, Janet Napolitano. I think she was the governor. I think she was governor of Nevada for a while. Maybe it was New Mexico, Arizona, it was one of those states. But even though she was a Democrat, she angered everybody, and the Democrats in her state often joined with the Republicans, and they tanked over 100 bills that she had proposed. Why? Well, even the people in her own party didn't like her. And that's not going to allow you to win. Oh! Plus, when you put all this together, an unlikable, unpopular governor could also impact elections.
Yeah, like for example, like in California, they're like two or three years ago, they did a recall for Gavin Newsom, who's the current governor of California, though.
They did.
Yeah, they did a recall for him, though. But somehow there were, I think most of them were just were nays, though. But only like, I think like half the parts of the state, though, were yays.
There was an effort in California to actually break the state up into quarters.
Not too long ago, the plan was actually drafted. It was actually approved by the people, by a majority of the voters. But the state Supreme Court said no. So yeah, California, yeah, they keep saying California is a solidly blue state. No. There's as much division in California as there is in many states.
Yeah, just like for example, like in Texas, though, just like Texas and Florida, they're both red states, though, you know, like, but there's some areas that are, you know, like divided, though, too.
Right. Exactly. Because you can't force people to agree. Everyone is entitled to their own opinion, and that's all politics is. Politics is your politics is your opinion. Doesn't mean you're right. Doesn't mean you're wrong. It's just your opinion.
Exactly.
All right, so how can an unlikable governor hinder elections? Well, when Mitt Romney was governor, he was arrogant, he was pompous, and during his midterm, which was a presidential election year, 2004, he became so unpopular that the Republicans running for the state house were crushed. And I told you, that was the point when we were the most lopsided in the whole history of our state. It got down to under 20 members of the Republicans in both chambers combined. And a big factor was the people who just didn't like the governor. So they punished the representative candidates.
I mean, and the state itself didn't even vote for Mitt Romney in 2012.
No. No, it did not. 2000.
Yeah, he ran for president in 2012 against Obama.
So, personality, popularity, partisanship, elections, these all, on the, I got to do the all other side as well. So if a governor is hugely popular and allows his party or her party to win, that may increase the likelihood that they can do what they want. That's what's usually called a mandate. So again, but there's no predictor. You can't predict what the outcome is going to be. So, can the government put their finger on the scale? Oh, absolutely. Your book also mentions how the governor can manipulate legislative outcomes by using the budget to give what's known as pork. Does anyone know what pork is?
Like pig?
What?
Like pig?
No. In the political sense. Pork refers to financial rewards, little gifts that get sprinkled into the budget so that way individual elected officials can go back to their district during election time and say, look what I did for you. It's just little monies, sometimes small, sometimes a trifle, but they can use that politically to spin it like, look at what they're actually doing. There is a house race that I'm kind of watching with curiosity involving the incumbent, Paul Frost, from Auburn, who's going against a woman from Millbury, Terry...
Cruz?
No. I can't remember her last name. Terry has caused controversy because she was the woman that I told you about before that sparked a lawsuit against Millbury when she was trying to put those restrictions in for the drug clinic. I think I mentioned that as an example. Yeah, so she's very controversial, but she served the country. She's a veteran. So Paul Frost, in going against her, and it's his campaign, is mentioning, yeah, he hasn't done it. He actually said this. I haven't done any big laws. I haven't brought anything big, but I helped like Auburn get $50,000 so they could buy a new turnout gear. Like, he talked about all these little trifle things. Well, how did he get them? He got them by basically being a good little doobie, you know, in the state house. All little pork things. The most famous example of pork that I can think of goes back to in Alaska. There was a U.S. senator that got money to build the bridge to nowhere.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was just pork. Why? Well, he was loyal to the president, so the president put it in the budget and got like millions of dollars to build a $2.5 million bridge or whatever it was to an island that had like three people that lived on it. All of that money wasted. But you know what he was able to do? Go back and say, hey, look what I did. I got money. That's pork.
That's an awesome word to use.
Questions? Now, by the way, pork isn't just always in the form of payment either. Pork could also be favors, opportunities. So, what happens frequently, particularly during electoral season, is that the
elective officials engage in fundraisers where they invite national people to come in? Well, if you are loyal to the governor, they'll invite you to a fundraiser that maybe a potential vice presidential candidate would show up at. And then you can get your photo op, and maybe that could convince, when you put it up on your social media account, hey, look, I'm so popular I met the potential vice president.
I feel like porn debt, like, directly relates to, like, bribery.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Why? Because all politicians act like pigs to a trough.
And even Supreme Court justices are just loose.
No, that's not true.
You don't think he takes bribes?
No, I don't think so.
Hasn't there been, like, things, like, saying that he's been taking, like, multiple, like, high-end bribes? Like, I don't know. I feel like I...
There's no proof that as a result of what he's got... Now, you're supposed to claim all that. But the problem is that he just hasn't.
Okay.
For whatever reason. And he's not the only one.
Yeah.
But the problem is that the liberals hate him, so they're claiming that his votes are being bought, even though there's no actual proof that he changed the way he voted as a result of anything.
Okay. Because he hasn't claimed it. Yeah,
got it. That's all it is.
Okay.
So could he have avoided all this? Yeah, just do things the way he's supposed to do. All right, any other questions on pork? All right. The next job of the governor is to be the top administrator in the state. And they are in charge of running the entire executive branch. And again, depending upon the state, the executive branch could be significant. So, if you ever hear about a government agency, Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, Health and Human Services, the State Park Department, Environmental Regulations, you know, there's all these executive agencies. Well, in a big umbrella, technically all of those agencies fall underneath the governor. And the governor is tasked with essentially making sure that all of the agencies and departments and boards and committees that make up the bureaucracy are essentially doing what they are supposed to do. Now, the sad truth is that many people have no idea what's in their state constitutions. And thus they have no idea what the government is supposed to be doing, or the governor is supposed to be doing. Many people think the governor is like a king, and that the king can issue decrees, and that everyone has to obey. Case in point, the COVIDs under Baker. The governor said, and everybody obeyed, like he was a god, without questioning it. Well, the truth be told, the governor can only do what the Constitution and the legislature allows the governor to do. So, for example, all of those executive orders that Baker passed during COVID, there's nothing in the Constitution that gives the governor the authority to pass an executive order to force us to do anything. But people complied because the legislature allowed it to happen. But if the legislature resisted, all of that could have stopped. An executive order is an order to a member of the executive branch telling them what to do in their job. So long as those duties have been established through statute. So, let's say the great and general court passes a law that says trash collectors that work for the state must stop on every major road and pick up trash. That's what the law says. That's what the department duties are. The governor can use an executive order and come in and say, well, because there's so many major roads, maybe you should do the even roads on the even days and the odd letter roads on the odd days. So he's not adding responsibility. He's not creating responsibility. He's just kind of clarifying how he wants them to do their job. That would be allowed.
But the key is, it begins and ends with the legislature.
Truth be told, in terms of the executive branch doing things, the governor is actually more like a cheerleader, not a king.
So he can root for the bureaucracy to do something. But he can't compel them. He does not have the authority to legislate. He cannot make law. Or she. Why?
Because what's in every single constitution in our country?
Separation of power.
And?
Checks and balances.
How do you know?
Because you told us, Professor.
Because that's literally what it says on screen.
There are a separation of power. The job of the legislative branch is to pass the bills. The job of the executive branch is to enforce. And the job of the judiciary is to adjudicate situations under the law. And the checks and balances. The whole system was designed to prevent one person from becoming a literal tyrant. By spreading out the power to the different entities. So, in a sense, the governor is not a king. The governor is kind of like a CEO of a corporation. Can kind of set the tone for the overall attitude of the company. But the CEO doesn't distribute the inter-office mail. The CEO doesn't fulfill the orders. The CEO doesn't do purchasing. The CEO doesn't do payroll.
I like the cheerleader one better.
Yeah. Give me a law. Give me a law. Yay, law. There you go. So, to govern effectively, the governor can set priorities, the governor can call for policies, but the governor can't do it by him or herself. Questions? Sometime governors are called on to be MCs. Master of Ceremonies. Governors have the right to greet dignitaries. So, not too long ago, I think it was before he dropped out, Biden came to Massachusetts. Maybe it was after he dropped out. But he came to the state to do a fundraiser. And I remember seeing on the news, you know, that Governor Healey met him at Logan Airport. Of course, he took the little stairs off Air Force One. He's not allowed to do the big stairs anymore. So met him on the tarmac and helped, shook his hand and greeted him and welcomed to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And then ushered him to the Beast, the armored limo that the president gets to drive in. The state has a right to meet any officials. There have been Pope John Paul came to Massachusetts. Back in the 80s, met with the governor at the time. I think it was Dukakis. We've had other international leaders. We've had corporate leaders that come in. And there are times when the governor sits down and has, you know, meetings with them. The governor can also confer state decorations. The governor has a right to reward citizens with distinguished awards and medals. Obviously, it's not like the Congressional Medal of Honor, but our state does have awards that are similar. The governor can also issue symbolic proclamations. They can call for, you know, it's usually the governor that sets forth a proclamation, like when they're going to have like a duck boat parade. You know, saying that today is going to be a day of Patriots Day or Celtics Day or something like that.
Is that how they did the, like the duck boat parade? You were just talking about like the Celtics celebration?
Yeah.
When they go through Boston?
Yeah, but the governor issued a proclamation saying that this is a day, Celtics Day. You know, it's just something like a one-off.
They can do that?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's just ceremony, though. It's just a ceremony. The governor can also go around and attend events. Every now and then, when the Big E's going on, for example, the governor will go out there and show up. And just kind of walk around and just kind of be there. Say, hey, maybe they'll get a chance to get up on stage and get a mic and say a quick speech and thank people for coming and stuff like that. Now, in some states, they actually allow the governors to have an inauguration parade. Not Massachusetts.
So, like, if our governor wanted to, like, celebrate their birthday, they could, like, close an entire street and have, like, an entire birthday parade?
They could, but they would have to get the mayor of the city to go along with it. And that would be seen as narcissistic and egotistical and would probably not do well with the folks.
I guess so.
Yeah, because what are you getting out of it?
Good question. So what states have, did you know, like inauguration parades, though?
They're the minority of states. I think Texas does. I think California does. I can't remember. But there are not many of them at this point. They're seen as wasteful and fiscally unresponsible. So many of the states have just kind of said no.
Yeah.
All right. So in addition to all of these other hats, another hat that the governor has to wear is they have to deal with other levels of government. Meaning, the governor is the point man or woman if the federal government needs to interact with the state. And federal to state relations are huge. So, think of in the event of a national disaster. You know, when the president is going to make a call to see if a state needs emergency aid, they're going to call the governor and put in a request. So Kamala got herself in a little bit of controversy when she claimed in the press that after the last hurricane hit Florida that the governor, DeSantis, didn't answer her calls. And then later in the day, Biden came out and said, oh yeah, I've been talking to DeSantis, you know, for several hours and everything's going fine. We're coordinating things. Well, it's not the job of the vice president who's running to be president to call governors. That's the job of the president to call governors. And the president did so, and Florida, like all the other states, were able to get some money. Although not a lot, though. Actually, one of my wife's friends has a house down in Florida that was destroyed, and they aren't getting anything. I think like $800. There's no money left. FEMA spent it all on the illegals. So until the next legislative budget, they have no house. And the insurance companies aren't running in to bail them out either. So there's a lot of people. Don't think that the damage that was done by those last two hurricanes is undone. There are parts of North Carolina that still don't have running water, electricity. I mean, there are fellow Americans that are suffering.
Yeah, and some parts of South Carolina and Georgia, too.
Yep. So, again, hopefully, regardless of what happens on Tuesday, that the federal government can wake up and go and help these people, because if you're going to spend money on anybody, it should be the legal residents and citizens of our country.
Is that similar to like Lahaina in Hawaii?
Oh God, they got completely bailed on. Yeah.
Yeah, like with the Maui fires.
Yeah. Lahaina, a beautiful city. Beautiful. We went to Maui for my honeymoon. I remember Lahaina. Beautiful people, beautiful place, very historic, wonderful time, and just gone. Just gone. And there's no one coming to bail them out. Sad.
Very sad.
Very sad. All right. Governors also, yes?
So with the hurricane, yesterday I was mentioning to someone, like, it looks like it doesn't affect us, but it does affect us, like, because we are ordering some stuff from that side. And we didn't even know that's where we're coming from. It took us 5 days to just get a phone call to our phone. We just came to the line and said they are not operating because of what's going on.
Yeah.
Right. When, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are parts that hit. It's going to take a long time for those areas to recover, if they're even able to recover. Because often what happens is if there's a area that's devastated, most of the people just give up and leave. And they'll move to be where their families are if they're located in other places. So, yeah, I keep them people in my prayers, anyone who's impacted. And again, hurricanes don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. So, just if you have opportunity to donate, I'm a member of a charitable group, and we gave, we don't have much money in our budget, but we gave $1,000 to the Red Cross to help out with hurricane relief. So if you see someone collecting money and they're legit, give them a couple of bucks. Because you don't want to be in the situation that those people are. But if you ever find yourself, you can only hope that there are generous people willing to help you. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're all here to do. We're here to help each other out. All right. Getting to this because I want to get this done before we leave. State to state, sometimes governors need to communicate with neighboring states to coordinate efforts. Well, it doesn't make sense for all of the legislatures in the legislative branch to contact the other state's legislatures because you could have hundreds of people trying to talk to one another. No, it's easy just to have one point person. So there are times when New England coordinates efforts, and it's usually the governor that's on the phone, reaching out, coordinating things. Good and bad. Oh, I got a really good example. Oh, and sometimes it's hostile. You're not going to remember this, because when the heck was this? Sonny Perdue was governor. So that was before he went into the Senate. So this maybe
no,
had
that
to
was,
be.
I think that was David Perdue though from Georgia. That's his cousin, David Perdue.
Oh yeah, yeah. So Sonny Perdue, he was governor, and Georgia had a water issue. And part of the reason why they had a water issue was because Tennessee was blocking the flow of water into Georgia, and it got to the point where I think Atlanta was down to like 4 days of water. And the governor of Tennessee just basically refused to open up the levees to help out Georgia. So, but it took a lot of triangulation, and eventually the president intervened and got Tennessee to open up the water, so water flowed. And then luckily Mother Nature came in and provided enough rain to help fill the reservoirs again.
Yeah, they only have 4 days left of water.
Yeah, I know. Insane. Yeah, I know. But Tennessee was sitting back thinking, well, we don't want to be in that situation if we give them all the water. Because water is a precious commodity. You can't make it in a factory. Governors also engage in state-to-local reactions and interactions. And sometimes they're formal and sometimes they're not. So I do actually have a personal note in here. When Deval Patrick was governor, he was famous not allowing the press to follow him. And he would just randomly show up in towns. Not that he was looking for any attention, he just wanted to go out and have a chance to meet with people. God, it's a Democrat, I'm giving praise. But one day I was sitting in Puffin's, a little breakfast bistro that was in Millbury, and
lo and behold, Deval Patrick just walks in out of the blue. And he takes photos with people, and he's nice, and he buys everybody breakfast, just being really generous. But the reason why he was in town was he was going to Milbury Town Hall, and he was presenting them with a grant check. And he felt it was so important that he wanted to deliver it himself. Well, I'll tell you one thing, the following year, most of the votes in Milbury went to him, even though Milbury was a Republican town. So not only do governors and yes?
Sorry, I just want to ask, who was that guy?
Deval Patrick. So Healy is our current governor. Charlie Baker was in for 8 years, and his predecessor was Deval Patrick.
So he was a pretty good fellow?
Yeah, he was pretty decent. I didn't agree with him on most issues, but he was a decent person, and he was good to talk to, and again, he bought me breakfast, so I got no complaints.
That's so cool.
Yes? Absolutely. Yeah, and American people in particular are fickle. We don't like snobbish people, generally speaking. You know, even though it's not always the case, but often it's asked, which would you rather have a beer with? You know, who would you invite if you had a family barbecue? You know, we as Americans, probably because of the media, have this desire to have a president that is basically likable. And if they're not likable, we have a tendency not to vote for them. So yeah, image is huge, huge. Definitely, I agree 100%. And that's what makes a governor successful. All right, the last in terms of intergovernmental relations, there actually is a National Governors Association that meets twice a year. All of the governors, whether they're Democrat or Republican, usually go to D.C., although sometimes the meetings do travel around the country. They gather together and they discuss policy. They discuss coordinating efforts to link the what's going on in the states to national concerns, or vice versa. Because as we know, in our federalist system, the states are allowed to do some things on their own, but there are other things that they have to coordinate with the union. So what this group does is they get together and they talk, they brainstorm, they establish best practices, and they coordinate.
Yeah, like for example, though, like in Texas, though, with Greg Abbott, though, like in Texas, though, like back in it was back in January, though, like other governors, they you know they went to Eagle Pass, Texas, though, to speak with Governor Abbott, though, in Texas, though, about the border.
Yeah, well, yeah, because all the people, well, not all of them, but a lot of them are coming across through Texas, and then once they get out of Texas, where do they go? Everywhere else. So yeah, a bunch of governors did go down there to see with their own eyes and to talk. Because even though some of us may be a shy, one of the most important things that will allow us to be successful in life is to talk to other people. Even if you think you're going to disagree with them, talk to them. Because you may be able to find common ground.
Huge. Very, very important. All right.
Another thing that governors do, well, they promote economic development within their states.
What they want to do is they want to bring businesses in. Because what do businesses bring with them?
People and money.
People and money. Jobs. That's going to have a trickle-down effect. More taxes are going to be collected. And people are going to have money in their pockets to go out and spend and support local businesses.
So, I mean, it happens more often than you can imagine of governors going out and meeting with CEOs of companies and attempting them to lure them in by giving them perks. Andrew Cuomo worked really hard, former governor, he resigned in disgrace, but probably not the best example, but just popped in my mind. He worked really hard to get Amazon to build a huge headquarters in New York City that would have brought in something like 300 jobs, and all the jobs would have been six figures. But his efforts ultimately were stymied by AOC, because Amazon was a big corporation, and big corporations are bad. That was a shit show. And I think they went to New Jersey, so good on New Jersey. But that happens all the time. So every now and then you'll hear about a new big company potentially setting up site. I can guarantee you, the only reason why they're looking to come in is because of communications they had with the governor's office.
And those are beneficial for the state.
Yeah. Well, don't you want companies coming in?
Yeah.
Offering jobs for the residents? Absolutely. If you are against business, you're going to kill your economy.
No, yeah, obviously. But sometimes some businesses can bring bad things. Like, you know, like how you didn't want, like medicinal, like marijuana.
Right, well, it's, I didn't say I didn't. The people did.
Sorry.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, the people didn't want it. And that's their right. But there was nobody coming in trying to lure them in. The difference is they were trying to come into town on their own. And just, you know, the people said no. So it is what it is. You got to do what the people want. But I'm talking like when General Electric opened up a huge headquarters in Boston. They were operating in another state, and they moved, I think they were in Connecticut, actually. I think we poached them for Connecticut. So they come in, they make a huge investment, they build a new building, property taxes go up, they start hiring employees, and again, the employees make money and they spend the money, and it trickles down.
And sometimes there's interesting competition. I know this is a dated example, I probably should update these, but the previous governor of Texas, Rick Perry,
mm-hmm. I know him.
He actually bought radio ads that aired in California, claiming, and I quote, "Why our low taxes, sensible regulations, and fair legal systems are just the things to get your business moving to Texas."
Yeah, you know, he also served as Secretary of Energy in the Trump administration.
Did after that, after
yeah, like after, like after he was like when he was done being governor, but like this was when Greg Abbott was his governor, though.
Yes, yes. So Rick Perry managed to lure some big businesses to Texas, including, he set the stage to get Tesla to move. So.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Getting Tesla to move down there when Texas is one of the biggest oil manufacturers in the country.
Cheap taxes, low regulations, mm-hmm. increased profit margin. All right, another way to promote economic development is to increase tourism. Tourism generates big bucks for each state. So I remember back in the early 2000s, BP, the oil company, had a catastrophe where one of their oil rigs kind of failed, and there was a big spill.
Yeah, it was awful.
Well, all of the governors of all of the Gulf states got together when the cleanup was done and made joint ads that ran throughout the country, basically advertising, it's all clean, come back down to the Gulf. DeSantis, although DeSantis is fighting with Disney, but, you know, sometimes they get this something like Orlando, which is like one of the biggest tourist places in the country. You know, they'll advertise it. Oh, if you go in Logan Airport and you're going from the garage to the terminal or vice versa, and you listen to the message that's going over the speaker, the governor will sit there and talk about, oh, welcome to Boston while you're here. Why don't you go see this? Why don't you go see that? You know, just promoting tourism. Because, again, it's all about generating money. Money for the people of the state. And yes, sometimes, they do travel abroad. There have been governors that have gone overseas to meet with leaders of other nations.
in hopes of expanding economic relations. So the most recent trip that I can think of was when I think Healy went over to Ireland to meet with some of the businesses that used to operate in Massachusetts and decided to go over to Ireland because Ireland has like very little corporate regulations. She tried luring some of them to come back, and they all said no because they all basically told her, this is the story of the Globe, that it's basically too expensive for them to start up a new business in the Commonwealth. So will that result in her trying to champion a reduction in regulations? Who knows? But it could happen. All right, the last hat that they wear, and I think I have enough time to do it. I do. I don't need the 7 minutes that are left to do it. Because like I said, the last job is they're viewed as the leaders of their political party. They are the highest ranking member. And this means that often they can kind of set the tone for the party's platform. So not only can they set policy for the state, but they can basically transform what the party itself represents. And that can be good, or that could be bad. So if the governor's popular, they may do endorsements. They may go around and help the candidate who's struggling campaign. They may appear in ads. One of the hugely impactful acts that occurred in Massachusetts recently, again, you got to go back to Deval Patrick. It was basically Deval Patrick that helped Elizabeth Warren to win. Elizabeth Warren is not personable. She's not likable, and she was not popular. So Deval basically held her hand and went to all of the public events, and oftentimes he would speak. Why? The people liked Deval. So it caused a lot of voters to sit back, well, we like him, and he likes her, so maybe she's okay. And ultimately it helped Trim put her into the Senate office. But again, I already told you about the example of Romney. Romney was not likable, and he hurt Republicans. So again, governors play a big role. Now, by the way, Charlie Baker, more recently, divided the state Republican Party. And he has effectively hamstrung the party's ability to run candidates because he put his people into the Mass GOP and they drained the money from the Mass GOP to support his race. But then during his 8 years in office, he frequently endorsed Democrats over Republicans. So in the end, he hurt his own party. And that's one of the reasons why he could have run for a third term. But he did not, because he knew the party members were so mad at him that he never would have been nominated for re-election. And he would have had to run as an independent. So, long story short, politics is messy. And again, every state has different dynamics. But ultimately, it boils back to the fact a governor can be successful in all of these roles if they're popular with the people, they seem personable, and they have a clear agenda that the people can rally behind. But if they're divisive, then they can cause more harm than they can accomplish. Questions? Well, then I'm done with you. Time to go. Wow, I'm going to take that personal.